This is our Cassandra Bruner reading excerpts from For Deeper Water. After I stopped going to therapy, I realized that I never mentioned our relationship in sessions, that instead I expressed a lifelong sense of being unable to open for those I love in this wrong body. Funny how easily these antithetical realities could be held, how code-switching could become an anti-aphrodisial role-play. Reasons for these omissions, unintentional as they were, abound. Historically, trans women's sexuality has comprised one of the main prerequisites for access to gender-affirming procedures. Though criteria and taxonomies have fluctuated over time, these invasive tests have invariably boiled down to an individual's ability to pass as a cisgender woman. Infamously, under Blanchard's theory of transsexualism, straight trans girls, misgendered as homosexual transsexuals, were vetted as legibly female and given clearance for medication and surgery. Meanwhile, those who expressed lesbian desire were discarded as fetishists, misrepresenting their stories. Autogynephiles, they called them, called us, transitioning only to have a readily available female body to touch. These arbiters of someone's potential girlhood were, of course, mostly straight male doctors. Who better? Presumably, none of these folks ever stopped to think their theories amounted to the most ludicrous and expensive masturbation session ever conceived. Somehow, it's easier for some to imagine this plot concocted by a villain in the porno ripoff of a James Bond film than to believe trans women could love women, that women love women. I barely have to wonder what they think of me and my lover, a couple of trans dykes who can hardly keep their hands, mouth, teeth off each other, who delight in consuming and being consumed by the other. Necrotrauma, they speech. The necrotraumatic metonymic of tran, they speech from their tree above the world. Leave them their desiccating patch Leave them their desiccating patch of assumptions. Our field of possibilities is in bloom. If I'm honest, though, my silence wasn't only a response to these historical pressures, a tapping into a collective trans girl unconscious. No, it reflected a simpler, more selfish desire to keep the narrative of my traumas parallel to and separate from our story. As if living adjacent to a burning building were a viable option, as a smoke when it starts drifting through the open windows. One silence begets another. I am assaulted, presumably, to correct my femininity, and in the aftermath, lack words to express those loss and my longings, be they dysphoric, sapphic, or otherwise. When I finally articulate what happened, I am told my longings formed reactively to my loss, though I know, want, hope, these desires preceded violence. Schisms form, as language is the first sight of loss and our first defense against it. When our expression fails us, or is taken from us, or is twisted in the mouths of others, it creates the fractures which give rise to compartmentalized life. I could be a lover in my girl's arms, a survivor reclined on the psychiatric couch, a woman on her own beginning to recognize herself in the mirror, but not all at once, not all the time. Or rather, I am all these bodies all the time, and it exhausts to hold them together. This isn't to say there aren't breakages. After all, the membrane between these selves is permeable. After all, a sieve under constant use will eventually show signs of wear, and show it does. Why else, aside from it being the summer of my thesis year, would I write poems attempting to parse the gang rape and its aftershocks as she sleeps beside me? Why else would I, on occasion, leave these drafts on her nightstand and coffee table? I might as well have carved messages into her belongings saying, "Love, you punctured my solitude in part, but not in whole. Please, keep looking. Find me out." If she ever stumbles upon these half-hearted stabs at confession, she doesn't mention them. Within a few days, I gather them all in a folder, which I keep out of sight, ashamed of my juvenile ploy and the harm, the confusion it could have caused. These reductive and constraining understandings, which at once name us trans and discipline us for being so, didn't spring out of the ether fully formed. Rather, there exists a history of narratives which have constructed and propagated the rape as ontology trope. Some of the oldest stories within the Western canon frame transition as a violation, as a byproduct of violation, as the violated becoming their violator. Considered a myth of Hermaphroditus, who's at once the only problematically transfeminine and intersex figure in Metamorphoses. A child of Hermes and Aphrodite, he descends from Olympus and wanders the earth, eventually finding himself in the grove of the nymph Salmacus. After declining her advances, the godchild bathes in the fountain spring, centering her grove. She stalks Hermaphroditus and tackles him underwater, begging the gods to order it from this day. He will not part from me, nor I from him. They then meld into one figure, often depicted with slight breasts and slighter cock, a body like mine made exceptional and abject. Herein lies the story's paradigm. To feminize a body, a person of land, of water, is to render it irrational, wild, open to subjugation. The rhetoric of this narrative, then, mirrors the rhetoric of imperialism, which Ovid reifies throughout his Metamorphoses. A project uncritically describing the order of the world will inevitably naturalize it. Rape and violence made as ordinary and preordained as the seasons, made even into the cause of seasons through the abduction of Kore/Persephone. Conqueror and conquered. God and mortal. Monarch and servant. Civilization and wilds. Masculine and feminine, active and passive, the river strangled by the dam. Even if we'd never read Ovid, my lover and I would have intuited the language underpinning the figure of Hermaphroditus. In fact, we've had to take on this misapprehension of our bodies or risk having it hammered into them. How else to explain our preternatural sense of strangers' gazes? The way our skin goes taut and our gait quickens as we envision the cat call become recognition, become bashing. We know almost prelingually that passersby read us as trans before, if ever, they read us as woman. We know by proxy that they view us as predatory tricksters, that in a cruel kind of algebra, they equate our expressed femininity with an underlying deviance, the lingering shade of Salmacus. Our mere existence threatens. Our queer womanhood is seen as a vector of emasculation, a fear that also projects across time from Hermaphroditus' story onto us. After all, they lay a curse on the fountain to sap the virility out of any man who steps foot in it after being assaulted. The sight of a singular trauma rendered collective. We too are at once seen as products and purveyors of violence, which in turn makes us deserving recipients of further violence. This mesh of powers will not loosen for my lover and I, so we adapt to it. I make a habit of wearing layers, flannel, leather jackets, jeans to conceal my lacy bras, my burgeoning breast, and ass. Though she thinks more androgynous styles suit her better, my partner keeps it hyper-feminine or hyper-masculine in public, as sticking to obviously binary dress can draw away undue attention. When we go out, we park as close to our destination as possible and walk with our heads lowered. When one of us leaves from the other's place, we wait anxiously till we get the text confirming they've made it home. Strangely, we find walking together can mitigate the danger. Perhaps it's because the one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves, or because our being a couple negates our predatory potential as we take out our perversions on one another. Even if it changed nothing or made matters worse, we'd still prefer to be together. As she intimates once, after a run-in with a man culminates in him spitting on us, I know it's selfish, but I'm glad you were there. To dust me off. To steady me. I understand. It gets tiring feeling unseen in our hurt. No, love, you've studied and studied me too.